Mrs. J had been with us for over a week, with a slew of medical compromises. I'd taken care of her a few times, and her daughter June would occasionally be at the bedside. I happily went about my night, tidying, providing personal care, and checking items off my list. June would sit and watch whatever daytime show happened to be on while her mother dozed. Mrs. J was always dozing, as she was quite ill and fading rapidly, despite every intervention. When I returned from 2 days off, I received a report from the off-going nurse, noting that Mrs. J had deteriorated significantly while I was away. She no longer responded verbally and was rarely even alert enough to open her eyes. June had not been in over the last day and had not seen her mother swiftly draw into herself. I practiced my clinical detachment, focusing on ticking off my checklist, tidying, bathing, and caring for Mrs. J. At the same time, a large part of me began to warily keep an eye on her, checking in more frequently. June came in and sat in her accustomed chair, speaking to her mother about small things, keeping up a running dialogue that barely rose above the level of the television volume. I tried to remain in the background, giving them space, as I told myself. The determined cheerfulness of June's commentary made me inwardly wince, as nothing about Mrs. J's demeanor, color, or behavior gave any indication of improvement. As Mrs. J started to turn for the worse, her intern continued to update her orders with this medication or that treatment. She steadily lost size, but not weight, as her abdomen swelled with fluid related to her condition built up. June was there more and more often, worriedly looking at all of the equipment. I watched Mrs. J grow weaker and more fragile every shift, coming in one day to find that drains had been placed to relieve some of the fluid pressure. June rarely asked questions. I told myself she understood what was happening, and that she didn't ask because she knew the why. I made a point of speaking both to Mrs. J and to June whenever I was in the room, and not just because this is what I was taught or because I was raised to be polite, but because a steady stream of conversation filled the quiet. No one teaches you how to accept the silence, whether you're the patient or the caregiver. The turning point in my care for Mrs. J came on the day before she died. Despite our best efforts, Mrs. J had become unresponsive over the course of the last 24 hours. June continued to sit at her bedside, alternately holding her hand and talking. I noticed that the visits from the intern and resident became briefer and more focused on measurable data, without the longer dialogue about the trivialities of the day. The resident and I were at the desk, rapidly clicking boxes and typing notes on our respective patients, chatting back and forth, when I asked when June was going to go get the talk. There was a long look and a clammy silence. I was stunned, to say the least. Of all the reactions I might have predicted, cold fear was not on my list. Surely this was not the first time the topic of end of life had come up, was it? According to the resident, several conversations had been initiated among the physicians, but no one had made the leap to having a discussion with June about her mother's options. As a relatively new nurse and still fresh to the unit, I was hesitant to push too far, sure I would be speaking out of turn if I questioned too loudly this new information. At the same time, I was acutely aware of every desperate look I saw June give her mother, every fretful check of the monitors and every tightly grasped handhold. I questioned myself in my training. The chart was complete and all boxes were checked, and yet, were we doing the right thing? I was no stranger to loss in my own life, but this was my first experience on this side of the curtain. What was best for the patient and for the family? And who gets to decide? So many questions, and all of them overshadowed by the feeling that we, as the professionals, should have the answers. June became increasingly tense, speaking more to me over the hours as I kept her now unconscious mother as comfortable as my resources could make her. Shortly before I left for the evening, June headed home for some much-needed rest, though we both knew that the term rest was a polite fiction. Before I left, I mentioned to the resident, again, that it might be time to have an important conversation with June. I spent the drive home digesting my day. When I left that evening, her color was an indescribable blend of jaundiced orange and waxy gray. Mrs. J was dwarfed by the blankets and the pillows used to prop her up, tuck her in, and keep all the tubes, lines, and wires conspicuously out of sight. On the outside looking in, we were battling death and making it look like a regimented and tidy battle. Why, then, did I feel like there was an essential something missing? By the next morning, Mrs. J was more unstable than ever. I was shocked at how much change could take place overnight. As I began my morning routine, June told me how grateful she was that we were doing all we could to keep her mother alive. I didn't know what to say. I realized after my conversation with June that I could not politely wait for the logical conclusion to Mrs. J's story without saying something. I had no idea whether I'd be able to effectively explain myself or not, but I could not conceive the alternative. June standing by while we took those extreme measures made so famous on every medical drama. I found the resident and explained my point of view. The resident made a vague promise to speak to the attending and see what we could do. A few more hours elapsed, and I became a hawk, peering out of the glass doors to Mrs. J's room, waiting for the attending physician to make rounds before lunch. June didn't leave her mother's side, and neither did I, if I could help it. Mrs. J lay there, shallowly breathing and so still that the monitors provided the only proof that she was still there. Lunch came and went. I began to get inwardly fidgety, wanting to push forward with a care conference before I lost my chance. I found the attending and, much to my good fortune, the resident. I repeated my earlier conversation, pushing for the physicians to speak to June before she left for the day. Through great perseverance and not a little pressure on my part, I got all of the parties into the closest conference room within half an hour. This was my first experience in an end-of-life conference, and I wasn't sure what to expect, but I sat there and gave my presence to June. Once all of the technical specifics of the forms were explained, June was given time to decide how she wanted to proceed. She sat there, clearly in distress after having been presented with so many options. I sat with her silently until she asked me what I thought. And in the end, I chose the bald truth. I explained in simple terms what our interventions could and would probably do to Mrs. J. It was not an easy conversation. I did not say what I would do. Instead, I asked one simple question. What would she want? This question broke through June's anxiety like a bucket of cold water. There was no hesitation in her voice, though her voice was small. She wouldn't want any of this. And with that single statement, I saw June change. She dabbed her eyes, asked me to get the physician, and signed the papers withdrawing care. I stayed that night. I explained what the monitors showed, the changes in the final moments. I stayed and held June's hand while she held her mother's. I stayed to perform her final care. I don't know if it made any difference for June, but I will forever remember Mrs. J and June, and the realization that there is more to what we do than what is written, a more that we can accomplish than what we first realize. This was an extremely uncomfortable experience within the context of speaking up in the face of authority, but one from which I gained immeasurable confidence in my ability to provide for my patient. I've had many uncomfortable conversations over the years, with colleagues, with patients, with family members. But this experience with Mrs. J in June will always be my most powerful memory of experiencing death and finding my voice as an advocate.